of Vivo.
All right, I'm going to call the Jobs and Economic Development Finance Division to order. And the first order of business is to do the minutes. Representative Eklund, I'm sure you've taken a look at the minutes.
I'd be glad to move the minutes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Eklund. Any additions or subtractions or changes to the minutes? Seeing none. All those in favor of passing the minutes, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Minutes have been passed. We have all the bills will be laid over today. We're hearing four bills today, and as I said, they'll all be laid over. Each one at a maximum is about 20 minutes per bill. We'll get through them all and clean up this place and be out of here before the next committee comes. So with that, unless there's any comments or concerns, I will ask Representative Sandsted to the table, and I will move House File 620 for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Good morning, members. Thank you for the opportunity to present today. Before you, you have House File 620. House File 620 appropriates $450,000 each of the next 2 years from the Workforce Development Fund to Minnesota Diversified Industries, Incorporated. MDI is a nonprofit organization producing corrugated, standard, and custom plastic packaging solutions, production assembly, and environmental services. One of the products they produce is mail totes used by the Postal Service, and you'll get to see those in just a few minutes. MDI operates through an integrated workforce approach, with nearly half of all employees being people with disabilities. Organizations like MDI deserve our support so they can continue to offer these meaningful employment opportunities, which deliver not just skills on the job, but valuable life skills as well, and they contribute significantly to our economy. MDI recently opened a standard and custom packaging in Hibbing, and they're a strong economic driver for the region. They also have plants in Minneapolis, Grand Rapids, and Cohasset. With me today, I have Peter McDermott from MDI, who will tell us a little bit more about this bill.
Thank you, Representative Sandsted, and thank you, Chair Mahoney, and the rest of the committee for hearing MDI, a little bit about MDI's story. What we're here, as Representative Sandsted said, is for continued support. For the last 10 years, we've had appropriations to support MDI, and last 4 years been $450,000, which is about $2,250 per employee with disabilities. So I'm going to talk about who does MDI serve, and who is MDI, and what impact do we have on people with disabilities and others, actually. MDI actually serves a population we believe to be over about 100,000 people. And I'll tell you how we get to that. It's actually people that are not served currently by the Department of Health and Human Services or DVRS, Vocational Rehabilitation Services. And how we got to that is there are about 480,000 people of working age in the state of Minnesota with a disability. About 10,000 are receive employment services from the Department of Human Services. About 17,000 receive employment services from DVRS. So therefore, there's approximately 450,000 that have a disability that do not receive employment services from either. You take that 480,000, about 44%, and these are numbers out of the Olmsted plan, about 44% is 210,000, about 56% are not employed, 270,000. And they say there's 8.3% of those that are looking for work. But we believe there's a lot of people that have disabilities that have given up looking for work because they haven't been able to find it. Because it's just a bias against hiring people with disabilities, let's be honest. So we believe there's over 100,000. I mean, yeah, there's 40,000 that are looking for work, but there's a lot that could work and would benefit from work that are not currently being served by DHS or VRS. In fact, I'll just mention that the state spends about $2.5 billion a year on services for people with disabilities, and that includes a lot of federal money that's passed through. But they spend about less than $15 million on unemployment. And employment, if you think about it, people with disabilities, if they're employed, they actually have a better quality of life, and they're not on the dole. So it's a win-win, and they're taxpayers, so it's a win-win. So MDI's model is really unique in the state of Minnesota. We're a social enterprise model. We're effective and cost-efficient. We're about 95% of our revenue comes from the sale of products and services. At MDI, all employees are paid at least minimum wage and benefits. And again, the cost is about $2,250 per employee with disabilities. Now, MDI is really about workforce development. We target 50-50 people with disabilities and without, so it's an inclusive environment. It's not a sheltered workshop. Currently, we have about 40% of our population, about 200 people, are people with disabilities of the 500 that we employ. And I would say the other 300 or so people are people that are marginal as far as employment in the general population. So we're also, that's why I say we're workforce development. But people learn to show up work on time, respect their coworkers, and they work to their capabilities, which is oftentimes 100%. That's why we're able to make it work with 95% of our revenue, again, coming from sale of products and services. Our mission is to serve people with disabilities by offering inclusive employment opportunities and services. Again, as the Representative Sandstedt said, we have four locations. We actually started in the Twin Cities over in St. Paul by at the Christ Child School for Exceptional Children, wondered what's going to happen to her kids after high school. And they're going to be sitting home watching TV. So she actually hired a man named John Durant. And in 1978, he had an epiphany. He said, the best thing I can do for people with disabilities is give them real work. And they are entitled to that work just like everybody else. But you can see the population that we're serving in the locations, and it's a little bit different mixture of people with and without disabilities. Again, we target the 50-50. Currently, we're about 40%. And why 40% right now? We had a surge from the Postal Service, and we couldn't bring in that many people with disabilities that quickly. We'll get back to about the 50% over the next 6 to 9 months. So what do we do? How do we make this work? We actually produce polyethylene plastic products, and you can see some of them over here. We've delivered over about 95 million of those to the Postal Service. You guys, if any of you have them in your basement, I'm not going to say keep them there, but if you return them, then they won't be able to buy a new one. So at any rate, the good news is they last.
Did you say you're from the Iron Range?
I do live in Grand Rapids, actually. Headquarters is in Minneapolis. So, but anyway, the good news is they last forever. The bad news is they last forever. So, but it is leakage, I think, is why they continue to buy them. So currently we have a contract for about 3.1 million those totes between now and the end of the their fiscal year, September. But we also have been growing our commercial business. We sell about 7 million of these products to people like FedEx, Amazon. We're pending an order with Amazon right now for a box with a hard bottom. That's pretty exciting, and hopefully they'll buy more of those. But we do rolls and sheets of plastic, tree wrap, jet bricks, and custom products. We also do services here in the Twin Cities, and just a list of things that we do there. And they provide good jobs for folks. We did expand into Cohasset back in 2016. We actually combined with Hired Hands, Deer River Hired Hands, back in 2013. And Hired Hands was a typical day training habilitation center, basically a sheltered workshop with about 13 on staff, 55 people with developmental disabilities. And now they're working in our facility in Cohasset, which is much more integrated, and people with and without disabilities. At MDI, we want to have room to grow. That's why we've done these expansions in Cohasset. And then in Hibbing, we built a new building in Hibbing, just occupied that at the beginning of last year. It replaced the old Greyhound bus terminal, which is where we were for many years. And it's doubled the size of our floor space, if you will. And we had support, obviously, from IRRRB and St. Louis County and others. We also expanded recently, I'll mention, in Minneapolis. We had about 49,000 square feet. We added 11,000 square feet there. So we're expanding in order to provide room to grow and better working conditions. But there's a little bit about our financials. So MDI's resources, we have great employees and an inclusive environment. You'll hear from one of our employees, a couple of our employees in a minute. The social impact, we had a Wilder study do a study and said, what's the impact on the community? As I mentioned earlier, the people that are with disabilities now are able to, you know, become taxpayers instead of a drain on the community. And the return is for every dollar that's invested is $4.87 dollars to $1 invested by the state. And we do get contributions, private contributions. We are a 501c3. So we aim to add match abilities with opportunities. With that, I'll turn it over to Gene Eglinton, who's our Director of Employment Services.
Good morning. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Good morning. My name is Jean Eglinton. I'm the Director of Employment Services at MDI. I have spent my entire career supporting people with disabilities and have been with MDI for just under 5 years. And MDI's model makes sense. When you see that $4.87 compared to $1, that's a huge impact. And my team of 11 people is a primary reason why that is successful. We are able to support our employees that have disabilities, but also other members of our employment team that might have other barriers to employment, and we help them be successful. The services that we provide are basic that happen in other environments. It's just that we do it probably to a greater capacity. The services are individualized for each employee to be successful at MDI. Those services may include job coaching, such as helping employees stay engaged in their work and motivated to work to their capabilities. It also could be accommodations for individuals, such as more frequent breaks for some people, modified schedules, and also potentially using a stool. So it's really minor accommodations that workers at MDI may need just to be successful in their job. One of the most important things that we do at MDI is the development of employees. This includes working at MDI, but also for some people, it may mean moving on to a different job, either inside MDI or to another job outside of one of our plants. MDI will assist all employees to build their skills and advance to whatever the job is that they're looking for. In addition to that, MDI looks for opportunities to partner and collaborate. In 2018, we positively impacted 52 additional individuals in our communities. This effort for us has just started in 2018. In 2021, we hope to positively impact 200 individuals. So these are not individuals that work at MDI. These are other individuals in our community. One of the first ways we do that is we provide placement services and support for people who want to move on past MDI. It could be that they have started with MDI and we find them a job in the community and provide a little bit of support for them to be successful, but it also could be because we do provide fee-for-service for placement for individuals with disabilities through the Department of Human Services and through vocational rehabilitation services. In addition to that, in 2017, MDI also provided an effort for individuals within our organization to have a development opportunity to increase their professional skills. And we think that should be a given for a lot of employees, but I have three kids and I kind of wish that they would have been able to start out their career learning some of those basic soft skills and professional skills that we use at work. The course has been completed now by 93 individuals. 83 of them are employees of MDI that either have disabilities or don't have disabilities. 10 of those individuals that completed the course have been from local schools that are students in transition and also Special Olympic athletes. The emphasis is an opportunity for people with disabilities, but it also provides an opportunity to other people who may need just a little bit of work on those soft skills. One other comment about that I want to say is that we also have had 12 individuals who have taken that course who've also advanced, either inside MDI or taken a job outside MDI in a movement for their career. In addition to that, another partnership that we have is the Success at Work program that has been expanded across all of our locations. This program is a collaborative effort where we have given 10 scholarships away in 2018 to individuals who have disabilities, and it's given them just a little bit of that oomph to make sure they can go on to whatever that college experience is going to be for them. Our partner in that is the Grand Rapids Area Community Foundation.
Excuse me.
I think we have to move on.
I'm going to tell you fairly, if you've got another testifier and you're going to have time for questions,
that's good.
I don't want to cut off your other testifier.
Each one of these programs in the appendix to the handout, I think you guys have hard copies of it. There's detail about each one of these. And what we're doing is expanding to help other people besides our employees is what we're talking about here. And I should say our goal, by the way, in the next 2-3 years is to increase our employment to 600 and therefore help another 100 people with disabilities employed at MDI. So,
thank you.
I think with that, sure. Introduce me.
Yeah, I will introduce Steve, who is an employee in our Minneapolis plant.
Good morning. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Hello, my name is Stephen Rinaldi. I have worked at MDI for more than 7 years. I live in Invergrove Heights and travel to Minneapolis every day. I take Metro Mobility to work, which, as you know, will be a challenge, especially with snow. It's a challenge on most days. My job at MDI is important to me because it gives me purpose and meaning to not only me professionally, but also to my personal life as well. I like to contribute to society and show that we all have value, and I just not mean a person with disabilities, I mean to everybody. And just on a side note, I have tried to get other jobs at other times, other places, but as soon as they find out that I have a disability, it gets extremely hard for me to have a job, so I am very, very thankful to have MDI as my employer. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you, Mr. Rinaldi. Thank you. And that concludes the testifying?
Yes, sir.
Are there any questions for the testifiers or the author? Any questions? I've been on this committee for a long time, and MDI has had many champions. You now have a new one. I remember a couple of my colleagues in their first time presenting for MDI, and I asked a question, so it's good that no one asked a question because they protect this particular organization pretty well. Seeing no other questions or comments, thank you for presenting today. We're going to lay this over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Hassan, I think, is up next with...
Before we start, I want to tell everyone we have some boosters here, so help yourself, it's sitting on
that table.
Well, I think the page can bring those around. And you don't have to start with me. You can start right at the end and be sure you have napkins. Good morning, Representative Hassan.
Good morning.
Your bill is going to be laid over for possible inclusion. I see you have a couple of testifiers, so a couple of comments before your testifiers.
Yep. Good morning, Mr. Chair and representatives. I don't know if you guys know this or not. I used to work as my previous life as a mental health clinician, and I've worked with people who are struggling with mental health and chemical health. And this is one of the reasons why I'm carrying House File 605 with AFIVA, or what it used to be called Resource Inc. AFIVA is a trusted workforce development partner serving the Twin Cities and greater Minnesota since 1960s. AFIVA serves 1,800 individuals each year and helps more than 5,000 enter the employment that leads to careers. They serve individuals and families that face the largest disparities and barriers to employment and health. They are the only organization that integrates chemical and mental health services with employment. 94% of individuals that AFIVA serves live in poverty. 60% of them are people of color. 82% of them retain their employment for more than 6 months. AFIVA helped about 3,000 people move off of welfare to work last year. They partner nearly with 200 employers and business partners. And AFIVA uses this direct appropriation to provide career training and employment for individuals that they're serving in their chemical and mental health programs, bringing employment and training together with chemical and mental health recovery results in better and longer lasting results. As we know that we had the opioid crisis, we still have the opioid crisis, and people who are struggling with mental health and chemical health are mostly isolated and either stay home or stay in treatment. So finding a program that combines the mental health and chemical health and putting them to work and supporting them and giving them coaching and skills and retaining that employment, for me, is the takeaway for AFIVA. And we have two testifiers here today. We have Kelly Matter, who's the president and CEO of AFIVA, and she will take it from here.
Thank you for coming today. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Absolutely. Sincere thanks, Representative Hassan, for being the chief author of our bill. Thank you, Chair Mahoney, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kelly Matter. Thank you for inviting us to testify before your committee this morning. I'm here to express our very deep gratitude for the support that AFIVA has received since 2015 and to provide an update on the outcomes that we've achieved with your help and to ask for a small increase per year for the funding that we receive. For those of you not familiar, AFIVA is almost a 60-year-old organization. We serve 18,000 Minnesotans every year across 17 counties, and as Representative Hassan said, we're the only organization that brings together chemical and mental health with career education training and employment outcomes, helping approximately 5,000 people go to work every single year. We are serving individuals that experience multiple systemic barriers to education, employment, and well-being. Individuals we serve experience homelessness, joblessness, long-term extreme poverty, histories of incarceration, long-term reliance on public assistance, trauma, illness, disabilities, and other barriers. Yet every day, I get the opportunity to speak with and meet people that we serve, people that choose to come to AFIVA, hundreds of people every day choosing to start a different path, a path towards recovery, a path towards success, whatever success might mean to them. It could be gaining sobriety. Many times it's going back to school. Most of the time it's finding their first job or a career advancement. We're proud of the outcomes that we achieve and appreciate the support that has been provided through the direct appropriation to have even greater impact with individuals that we previously would not be able to serve with this, without the support that we've received through the direct appropriation. In 2015, we came to the legislature for the first time seeking a direct appropriation because we weren't able to be successful in making that connection that we're talking about, that connection for individuals at the kind of the right services at the right time in their chemical and mental health treatment program. Training and employment is an important part of a recovery journey, and we wanted to be able to create that opportunity for people that seek us out for our treatment services. Over 6,000 people each year that come to us after many previous treatment programs and have not experienced success in workforce and recovery. In order, and what we want to do and need to do is provide the intensive treatment, the intensive employment, training, and long-term support to help people be successful in the workforce. We are serving individuals that want to work, but do not immediately qualify or meet some of the basic entrance criteria for traditional workforce programming. And with this funding, we are creating that pathway and helping all individuals experience success with training, recovery, employment, and career advancement. Last year, 5,600 individuals went to work with our help. 83% were still working at 6 months. We awarded, through our licensed post-secondary school, 291 credentials to our graduates, and those are credentials that articulate to a Minsku institution so individuals can continue to further their education and training. 65% completed our substance abuse and integrated treatment programs compared to a 40% national rate of 40%, and 89% that entered the career education training completed that training. And we've served over 500 individuals to date with the direct appropriation provided to us starting in 2015. Over the last 2 years of funding and the near full employment in the state of Minnesota, we are serving individuals that have even greater barriers to having success in employment. Everyone that can work is working right now. We're serving largely a hidden unemployment population. Since the original direct appropriation, Avivo has needed to create three new, what we're calling first step, employment programs for individuals to experience success in training, to experience success in employment, and then help them longer term get connected to more career pathways training. We're serving people longer, and it costs more. We've also begun to introduce our training into phase one of our chemical treatment programming, introducing employment earlier in treatment. Mr. Chair and committee members, the outcome and the impact received is best described by individuals who have been successful in our program. And unless there are specific questions right now for me, I would like to ask that the floor be turned over to Hirut May.
And we will hold questions till the end. Thank you for coming today. Please identify yourself for the tape. And please proceed.
My name is Hirut May.
I think you'll have to speak closer to the mic.
Okay. My name is Hirut May. I've been living in Minneapolis since 97. I've been going to school, Avivo. So I've been successful since I went Avivo because I've been struggling with my life, so many problems I have, that when I start Avivo, they make me have confidence and the skill to do the maintenance training, and I've been, since I graduate, I work for City Minneapolis. I'm grateful I've been in Avivo. They changed my life. They are really good people. They're not even teach you. They are like family. That we will be okay too. We will be It's hard to speak up, but I am grateful I've been in Avivo. My life has changed since I graduated. I have a really good job, and good start. This 2019 is a very successful year for me. I'm grateful. I've been in Avivo. I wish I knew it a long time ago. And it will change. They changed my life to be
Thank you for your testimony. It's relatively, it's very moving, and we're glad that your life is progressing in the fashion that you want it to, which is really important. Unless you have any further comments, ma'am?
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. I'll note that Hirut works nights, and that is why she was able to testify with me this morning. So she also is probably tired in addition to being nervous this morning.
I always find it humorous that people come here and are nervous because I'm just a retired pipe fitter. We got a retired grocer. Got a couple other people that couldn't find any other employment. We're no different than you. Believe that. Representative Hassan, do you have some comments before I open it up to questions?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I just want to remind everyone that this bill in 2017 had a bipartisan support, and the appropriation that we are asking is $100,000 more than what we got last year for each year. And I hope that you can support. This is an important work, and I believe in this work. And I think that people who struggle with mental health and chemical health should be, included in our society, and they should have an avenue to be employed and to build their career. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions or comments? Representative Cosman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To either the author or Ms. Matter, I was wondering, could you tell us or share with us who some of your largest employee partners are?
Employer partners? Yes. I actually have an employer partner testifying with me in the Senate tomorrow, but timing didn't work out. We partner with any of the large local employers that you know. We have 8 different career pathways. So Hirut graduated from our maintenance training program. Mars and Maintenance is one of our largest partners. We're partnering with them at the airport. We're actually training incumbent workers from Marsden in their location so that we can help people skill up and move entry-level workers in behind. We have a health information technology program. We partner with Alina and Park Nicolet. We have a computer application training program. We partner a lot with Wells Fargo and U.S. Bank. About 200 employers sit on a business partnership council that we've been doing since 1989, and they guide our curriculum. They speak in our classrooms. They provide internships and tours for our graduates. And most importantly, they hire our graduates as well. City of Minneapolis, where Hirut works, is a member of our Business Partnership Council as well.
Seeing no further questions, I will think you made. Did you make the motion to lay this over for possible inclusion?
Mr. Chair, you made that motion, but I didn't make it again.
All right. Would you like to repeat it?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I move House File 605, layover for possible inclusion.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, testifier. Members, if anyone would like a copy of the first presentation from Minnesota Diversified Industries, we can get you one. Our page has them, or can get them. We have them now, so it's always good to get notes passed to the chairman. Representative Zahn? Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Good morning, Representative Zahn. Would you care to move your House File 580 for possible inclusion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 580 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Why don't you proceed and give us a few words of wisdom, and then we'll go to your testifiers.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. This bill addresses barriers to economic and financial stability in our communities and access to mainstream financial tools and products. It's a significant one. Far too many people in our communities are spending too much money to carry out their day-to-day financial lives, and too many lack savings and good credit essential elements of wealth building in our society. I have seen how these challenges can lead to persistent struggles with debt and inability to cover bills that ultimately sets already struggling families back even further. These problems disproportionately impact low-income people and people of color. We can and must do better to address these financial inclusion gap. There is a market places like check cashiers, pawn shops, and payday lenders that fill the gaps that banks and credit unions are not filling, and I am excited that fair financial access and reach is offering this bundled financial solution to fill the gaps and to work alongside people so they are successful in making informed decisions about their financial lives. I'm excited to support the financial inclusion work that Prepare and Prosper and its community partners are leading, and to further support their partnership with Sunrise Bank. This financial inclusion initiative will play an essential role in providing access to financial tools and products that many of us take for granted. Bridging the financial inclusion gap will ultimately improve financial lives in our communities. And I believe we have two testifiers here from our community organization, Prepare and Prosper.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Anne Lynn Clark, and I am the Financial Capability and Learning Director at Prepare and Prosper, a nonprofit based in the Twin Cities here. I really appreciate the opportunity to testify and support a House File 580, a bill to support FAIR, a financial solution for households who are financially marginalized and spend too much of their time and money operating in a financial world not well designed to meet their needs. I want to start by thanking Chief Author of this bill, Representative Zhang, and along with the members of the committee that are signed on as co-sponsors, namely Chair Mahoney, Representatives Gunther, Dabney, Kosnick, Moran, and Sundin. We have a financial inclusion gap in Minnesota. There are 328,000 households, according to FDIC data in Minnesota, who are financially underserved, 40% of which are from communities of color compared to 10% of white households. Research shows that a family without a bank account earning around $25,000 a year can spend anywhere between $1,200 and $2,400 a year simply on their financial transactions to get by. This amounts to a national industry of $173 billion, money that could be turned back around into the pockets of individuals and communities. The Financial Access and Reach, or FAIR, initiative is designed to bridge this financial inclusion gap, helping people move from those wealth-stripping financial products into products that protect and build wealth. So, FAIR is a bundled set of financial products consisting of a checking, savings, and credit builder account that together we call the FAIR Financial Solution. They're designed to work with people's financial realities, not against them. What that means is there's no minimum balance requirements, no overdraft, and it's available regardless of one's banking and credit history. However, we're going beyond just designing products, and we're changing processes, norms, and ways of doing business in a cross-sector partnership with a mission-aligned B Corp community development financial institution, Sunrise Banks. Together, we're proving that you can do well while doing good in banking. We're removing those barriers to banking that include access, trust, lack of transparency, by taking a community-based approach in delivery and distribution of the products. What this means is consumers can get fair through trusted community partners, think nonprofits, employers, public systems, who are trained as fair facilitators. So these fair facilitators on the ground promote, enroll, and provide coaching and support to fair consumers in both the adoption and ongoing use of their new accounts. Then Sunrise Banks takes over the servicing of the accounts. Currently, we're piloting FAIR with several distribution partners in the Twin Cities Metro, soon to expand to greater Minnesota. And in the words of one of our partners, Chad Dunkley, CEO, and Kelly Black, Benefits Manager of New Horizons Academy, which runs 70 child care centers locally, our employees are key to our success. And we truly understand that the financial stability of our workforce is essential to productivity and overall well-being. We are proud to be collaborating with Prepare and Prosper to advance financial security. We are particularly excited about FAIR's Credit Builder, which fills a major gap in one's overall financial profile. So, FAIR is showing early promising results. We see that FAIR users are worrying less about their financial security and improving financial self-efficacy through a greater sense of control in the day-to-day management of their financial lives. You'll hear from one such FAIR customer today. So with your support, we will expand access and partnerships statewide throughout Minnesota, develop and promote marketing campaigns to reach more Minnesotans, and support ongoing learning and evaluation to inform changes and ongoing improvements. Ultimately, our goal is to increase household savings and credit and overall financial well-being. So by listening to the community and pioneering these new dynamic channels of distribution to meet consumers where they are with products and supports to be successful in their financial lives, we really feel that the FAIR model has the potential to significantly reduce the financial inclusion and racial wealth gaps in Minnesota. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you again for this opportunity to testify in front of you today about the FAIR initiatives and the ways your support can help transform people's financial lives. I am now pleased to introduce Julie Richards to share her experiences.
Thank you. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Good morning. My name is Julie Richards. I'm currently a small business owner and a partner in another small business, as well as in transition from one salaried position to another. While I'm a teacher by trade, I've worked in the field of youth and human development for the majority of my career. My work has largely been in the out-of-school time realm, and that has taken me across several systems, including education, both public and private, juvenile justice, children's mental health, gang outreach, and also nonprofit work. I sit on several boards, and I'm also very active in my son's activities. He's 8 years old. Before I learned about FAIR, I learned about Prepare and Prosper. I spent about 1 year unemployed, and rather than look for work, I was able to participate in Minnesota's CLIMB program, in which participants focus on building a business as opposed to finding a job. And that's how I was able to build my consulting business and also this behavior intervention business. My caseworker through that program knew that my most important goal was to build my credit score in addition to an aggressive approach to student loans, as well as building that 3 to 6 month savings that we're supposed to have. But the credit score was the most important. And it was clear to me that a high credit score is critical to building opportunities and wealth, both for myself and my son. So she recommended Prepare and Prosper to me, and I immediately joined. Through them, I was able to work with a financial coach to prioritize the steps needed to reach my goals. He provided accountability, reflective questions, and information to help me make better informed decisions. And I learned about the FAIR program through him, and I'm currently using the Credit Builder package. Credit scores can be confusing and hard to control, and products to help you build credit scores are needed. In spite of paying all my bills on time, using my bank-issued credit card in a way that's most beneficial to me, my credit score still seemed to bounce around. And so we would do a soft pull, and it would show one number, which was like showing an increase in my credit score. And then when I would try to use that score to knock out a goal, the rate that the institution would pull would be much lower. And it was really frustrating. And so we decided that the FAIR program, the Credit Builder, would be a great addition, like an additional mechanism to helping me increase my credit score. And then the added bonus of it also being a savings plan at the same time is helpful. And so my credit score has indeed risen. I was able to ditch my corporate auto loan and instead move to my credit union for a much lower interest rate. And because of our conversations that my case manager and I had, or my financial coach and I had, around financial maximum financial impact. I'm also about to pay off the down payment assistant mortgage on my home, and then with that higher credit score, we'll be able to refinance my mortgage in a way that lowers my bills, allows me to put money, you know, more aggressively towards student loans, towards creating that savings plan for my son and I. I'm very thankful to FAIR and Prepare and Prosper. As a single parent, I don't have a partner at home to discuss financial issues with, and while my son is bright, he is still building his knowledge around finances. And so these opportunities are generational changing. It's already having an immediate impact on me financially and in the conversations I'm able to have with my son. He'll enter adulthood, hopefully smarter than I am and able to act on the knowledge that he has in a way that I maybe couldn't as a teenager or a young adult. And so thank you for the opportunity for allowing me to share my story with you. I appreciate what you have done and continue to do for the community. As you all obviously know, change doesn't happen at an individual level. It takes place systemically and institutionally. And, you know, as middle classes begin to shrink, people like me also need support in order to pass on generational wealth and not generational debt. Thank you.
Thank you. Do you have any further testifiers? Are there any questions or concerns, comments? I have one. As I read the bill, you are currently in the bill at in the base at $800,000 a biennium. Is this an additional $800,000 for bienniums for a total of $1.6 million a biennium?
No, this is $800,000.
Okay. Thank you. Seeing no others, check the list. Would you care to renew your motion?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to renew my motion to have House File 580 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you, and thank you to you, to the presenters, and good luck in the future, young woman.
Thank you.
Be careful when that young man gets to be really smart and a teenager.
I'm already worried.
I think. I think Representative Moran, you're up next. Thank you. Representative Moran, good morning. And
good morning, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, good morning. I would like to move House File 463 for layover for a possible inclusion of the omnibus bill.
Well, good. Do you have a few comments before you turn it over to your witnesses?
Yes. I am really excited to be the chief author of this bill and to really have an opportunity to share a little bit more about the work that the African Economic Development Solution does, which I'm going to call AEDS for the purposes of keeping it very short. So AEDS worked to build wealth within the African immigrant community, looking at the low-income community and the economically disadvantaged people. New immigrants and refugees often, if not always, have difficulty seeking and receiving traditional loans to start a new business. So what EIDS does is they assist aspiring entrepreneurs in turning their ideas into lucrative businesses, provide technical assistance to help existing businesses survive and thrive, including one-to-one coaching. They make microloans and packaging loans. And I just wanted to reference here that when we look at the African immigrants who often lack or do not have access to capital, this is in reference to Dr. Corey's 2015 research. The African Economic Development Solution, what they are doing is working to break the economic barriers in communities. And so I have a couple of testifiers here that I would like to just pass it on to and let them share their testimony.
Thank you, Representative Moran. Yes, you can probably take her mic there.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Chair and Representative. My name is Jean Galgalu, the President and CEO of Afghan Economic Development Solutions, AEDS. We are a nonprofit organization that serves Afghan immigrants in Minnesota. We're based in St. Paul. In front of you, you have Dr. Corey research 2015. This is the only about the Afghan immigrant research done in Minnesota, funded by McNeil Foundation and done by Dr. Bruce Corey, who was Associate Vice Chair of Concordia University at the time. Now he's a PED, City of St. Paul. So he have done that research to see the market potential of African immigrant in Minnesota. That finding is why we are here. The finding is on, I don't know the page number, it showed that, nearly 67% of African immigrants have a lack of access to resources, financial resource funding. What that really means that when small businesses started their business, they dig into their pocket and they dig into credit. Now they cannot attract traditional financial institution. So that is really what that the research show. They cannot attract traditional banking. Some of my testifiers here will testify regarding that challenge. With that lack of access to financial resources, the wealth gap will persist for generation to come. So the work of AEDS is to break that barrier. How to, we do training, business development training program, micro lending, we do lending, we do financial education, home ownership, and creative placemaking, which is the intersection of art and culture. So just to last year, we served about 267 clients in both in homeownership and the business development area. And with our small lending capacity we have, we provided $233,000 in 2018 and leveraged $1.5 million. What that means, with the capacity we have, the segment of population that we serve, really heavy technical assistance, and also those who don't have appealing credit to access to other resources. With the progression of what we did in the last couple of years, we are now a CDFI certified institution in the state of Minnesota. So we got that certification from Treasury, and now we are in the lending industry. With me, I have Frau Usha, who is the owner of and president of the Twin City Mobility. He can testify.
Thank you, Jim. Good morning, the chairman and members of the committee. My name is Fraoli Usha. I'm the owner of Twin City Mobility, Inc. Twin City Mobility, Inc. began with one van. Now we have over 20 vans. Our commitment is to provide prompt, courteous, and affordable transportation service for school, hospitals, nursing homes, long-term facilities, and network coordinating non-emergency medical transportation. Twin City Mobility, Inc. is a lifeline for vulnerable adults and children who need transportation to and from hospitals, clinics, and other medical facilities. I went to ADS in 2009 for business training. service and started Twin City Mobility the same year. For many years, I was unable to expand the business because of lack of access to capital. I work Monday through Friday on my business. In addition, I work other companies to support my family during the weekends. I tried to get a loan from bank, including the bank where I bank, and so far it is unsuccessful. My hard work didn't help me. My business was barely surviving. In 2015, ADS took risk on me and invested on marketing, accounting, business management, capacity building support, and as a result, I was able to secure contract and hire more employees to fulfill my demand. This great transformation for me personally, I struggled for many years to sustain the business. In 2016, ADS provided small loan capital to help improve my credit so that I can attract more loan capital for my growing business. I paid back the loan, but the challenge still exists. Supporting these people will help a small business like me to access loan fund and request your support our business thrive. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Jim, for this opportunity. Thank you.
With me, I have Kennedy, Wilmera Kennedy.
Good morning. Welcome to the committee.
Please identify
yourself for the tape.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is William Etta Kennedy, and I'm an immigrant from Liberia, and worked for Wells Fargo for 10 years as an accountant, and always wanted to have my own business. So did a survey within the Twin Cities, and I actually live in Ramsey, and there was a huge gap there for African grocery, because I myself had to drive all the way to like 30 minutes away from where I lived to be able to get, you know, minimal African groceries. So I decided to open an African food store just for dry groceries. And so I applied for a loan and at my bank where I worked, and I couldn't get the loan because to compound it all, I'm a widow. And so I have one income. So I decided anyway, because after I did the survey, I decided anyway that this business is going to work, because most of the Africans, Liberians, has a huge population here in West Africans. And so that's our stable food. So I'm like, okay, I'll go into my 401k and I will take the loan, and I did. But then I started on a part-time. So I was working Wells Fargo and then doing part-time. But then the business started to, demand started to increase, and I needed an expansion. So tried to get another loan, couldn't get a loan, because customers were coming to the store and they said, you know, you have dry foods, why don't you cook? Why don't you, you know, turn this in, we're busy, we're not going to come buy food and then go home to cook. So the demand arose for me to be able to expand. So I had to get another loan. I went around looking for loan from the traditional bank, of course, I could not. And I was able to contact AETS, and I was able to get a loan from them to buy the equipment, because of course I found a place in Coon Rapids and I found a kitchen, existing kitchen, but then I didn't have the money to, the funds to expand. So I contacted AETS and I was able to get a loan to buy my equipment. So I started the grocery store, and then within the grocery store, I have the kitchen attached to it. So when people come to buy grocery, they too can, people who don't want to cook, they can buy the already made food. And it's just exciting to know that, you know, the race was not much of a risk, because I see the benefit. I was afraid to take the leap, because of course, being a single parent and, you know, taking your 401k, you know, to start a business. But I so believe in it, and I knew that, you know, by the grace of God, it was going to work. So I just want to thank the organization for loaning me the funds to get the equipment to buy my kitchen, because I see that the grocery is being sold, but the kitchen is doing so well because people won't cook food. So I'm looking forward to get, you know, to expand into the Simpoa area, because people have to drive all the way to Anoka to get food. So I'm looking for expansion. So hopefully with the technical assistance, I'm trying to see how I can, you know, expand further. But this is a huge opportunity for me, the blessing that it is to be able to put your hands into something and, you know, scary doing it, and to see it succeed and grow in your own hands. So I just want to thank you for the opportunity and pray that the bill can be approved to help us to expand to what we want to do further. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions for the testifier?
Yeah, we have Fartun Wali, next testifier.
Oh, okay. I actually had a question, but I can ask it later.
No, okay. I can answer the question.
No, that's fine. I was looking towards Jean more than yourself. Where is your market?
Framingham?
Yes, for you.
It's in Coon Rapids.
Oh, that's too bad. It's too far to drive.
Yeah, but I'm trying to come to Singapore, though. That's what I want to do. I want to open my teaching in Singapore.
University Avenue, right?
Yes, that's what I want to do. Thank you.
Good morning. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Good morning. My name is Fartun Wali, Mr. Chair, member of the committee. I'm here to testify and support this organization. I lead a nonprofit organization called Isurun, and we primarily serve Somali women and their families, and most of them are immigrants and refugees. And the work we do is through public health umbrella. Our goal is to help them out of poverty. And so one of the challenges that families, especially women, face is illiteracy, financial hardship. But every immigrant and every African, I think everyone you meet, the immediate conversation when you have and say, what is the strategy of you earning income, that drive of I want to own my own business comes in, beside working with the family and trying to survive for the day. So when they try to find loan, as everyone else talked about here, most of the families, women we serve, really, they don't have credit. When I immigrated 18 years ago, I was told to stay away from the plastic that there's money in it, which means the credit card. A lot of families use just cash, so there's no credit built. And also going to a bank really is really scary, and trying to work with someone and there's so much paperwork. So I'm so proud that the leadership of Gene, one of the greatest strength that Gene has is really he's into the families that he serves, and he so much understands the families that we serve. What I want to talk about here is the lack of credit and lack of loans that Somali women and East African women struggle with. We have federal grants as an organization that we now we're partnered with, and his team, Gene's team, are teaching our families about financial literacy. And but getting a loan is really hard. And so what I'm here for today is that to ask you, all of us, whether you're new immigrants or you've been here hundreds of years, we all have one thing in common. We want people out of poverty. So with the loans that this organization is getting, and with all the support that we're giving these communities and these families, we're able to get them out of poverty, at least set them in a journey where they can earn income with their own current skills so their families and their kids can be having a better outcome and better health. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony.
I have Dr. Abe Dalu, the president of ANA Rural.
Good morning, sir. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
My name is Abe Dalu. I would like to thank Gene for this invitation, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Let me start by thanking you for what you're doing for the state of Minnesota on a daily basis. Let me just give you a brief introduction of myself relevant to the current discussion. was in the former Soviet Union for 6 years, you know, after the Ethiopian government became a socialist in 1974. And because of the relationship, I went to school there. And from after completing my studies there, I fled to West Germany. And from West Germany, I was lucky to be one of the individuals to get into the United States as a refugee in 1984. And since then, I think I felt at home because of what the United States provides for those people who work hard. And I am by training a toxicologist, and over years I served as a study director in non-clinical safety assessment of pharmaceutical drugs. And after working for so many years in 2012, unfortunately, I was laid off because of the situation at the time. And but I welcomed that situation because my wife, who is a nurse for many years, wanted to start our own business. And the two of us agreed on starting home health care to just give back to our community through that service. And when we started the business in 2012, there was we didn't have any access to loan. The bank wasn't willing to give us a loan because home health care is considered to be a high risk business. Because of that, I had to go to my 401k and withdraw all I had with penalty and paying tax on it. And we are glad we were able to do that, but there are many, many individuals who don't have that privilege or don't even know what 401k is. And since we started the business just coming to African Economic Development Solutions, they started or in 2008, I watched it grow very impressively. And when we started in 2012 our business, of course, they didn't have that capacity to give us a loan. But we are privileged to be coached by them, getting various technical assistance. And I was surprised when I was working for corporate for many years. I thought I got everything that it takes to run a business. But when you run your own business, it's a different story. And I was privileged, you know, to have AEDS on our side. And they supported us with the marketing materials and providing us with brochures, a business card. I even today hold in my pocket wherever I go. And I value their really service to African immigrants who are trying to not only make a difference in their life, but also contribute in the in their new home and to be productive society of the community, in this case, the Twin Cities and the larger Minnesota. And today, because of this report, we serve, we provide home health care to the seniors and the disabled individuals, over 70 individuals we provide service. This is all across the board. Some of them immigrants, some of them are U.S.-born individuals. And also, I'm very proud to also inform you, because of the opportunity we have, we were able to provide employment to over 70 individuals. About 60% of them are immigrants, and about 40% of our employees are U.S.-born employees. So from here, you can see how it's very critical to just see the immigrants here are looking for opportunities, one, to better themselves, and secondly, to provide to the community that welcome them and provide them in our home. So today, as someone who is testifying on behalf of African Economic Development Solution, I come here as an owner of a business, and secondly, I also sit on their board. I'm a member of their board, and I see the challenges they go through, and I see the many individuals that they are providing service to. I also was a member of their loan committee. I have seen so many applications coming, so many creative businesses that the immigrants envision to start. And in some cases, they were able to support or give financially. And in some cases, because of lack of fund, they have to put their application on shelf. So today, Mr. Chairman and committee members of this committee, I challenge you as an individual, and we have so many immigrants who are yearning to better themselves and also positively impact the economy of the Twin Cities and the state of Minnesota. And I think investing in this immigrants communities through AADES is very productive. And the one positive things that goes for AADES is because they understand they come out of these communities, they are culturally sensitive or culturally intelligent how they provide these services, and they can penetrate, and they have the trust of these communities. And as I close, I congratulate AADES. You have come a long ways, and I hope that you would secure this fund and therefore change the lives of many immigrants who wants to be a positive players in the economy of the Twin Cities and Minnesota. And thank you.
Thank you for testifying. Are there any questions? Representative Kaplan.
Thank you, Chair. I really appreciate the diversity of businesses that have been helped by your organization. And I was wondering if you had any information for us about how many more businesses, how many more loans you could grant with this $1.5 million. And then if there was any information you have about the average size of a loan, and if there's any interest rates that's charged to these loans. I know there's a lot of questions for 2 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and the member of the committee. We just completed our fund development completion for growth plan for the next 5 years. We hired a consultant, outside consultant from different state to help us through this with the staff and board members. We worked through how to grow this a small loan fund to $4.3 million so we can be sustainable. So based on this, the consultant suggested we provide up to $25,000 micro loan. So they suggested us to give a strategic investment also, because the business that we support to grow, they don't need $25,000 only, because $25,000 for growing business is just one payroll. So they suggested, so we can invest up to a bigger loan. We decided to invest a strategic investment up to $100,000 on growth businesses. So we grow our portfolio, also grow not only on a small scale, we grow with the growing business as well. So with this, there is value from 25 to 100 strategic investment, and we hope to sustain when we grow at $4.3 million, sustain itself. And the number is relatively, hard to say with, because an average, probably around $50,000 we provide. Probably the 50 loans. That could just estimate, but 1,500 loans.
Kaplan, did you have any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if, this was covered. Sorry, I had to step out for constituent. This may be to the author or maybe back to the chair. I'm just wondering if we have a history indeed of these revolving loan funds, or is this a new approach that hasn't been traditionally utilized before?
I think I'll take that one. And as a committee, we have supported, not often at this dollar figure, but we have supported organizations that have revolving loan funds, yes.
Okay. A further question for the chair, if I may.
Sure.
As we're considering, you know, so many different proposals related to either training or loan funds like this, could we get current information from BEAD on all the different grant funds in this category that we have funded in the past or current funding? So we have some comparison of how big is the pot.
I don't know that it would be available before, by the time we're making hard decisions. BEAD is a great organization, but it on occasions gets a little pokey. I'm trying to be tactful this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I will do what I can. And if you, why don't we try to meet offline here so I can get a clear understanding of what you're looking for and see if we can help you out with that.
Thank you.
Representative Hassan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to thank the author and also the African Economic Development Solutions. As an African immigrant, I know how hard it is for African business owners and African individuals to, or immigrants in general, to get loans. Doesn't matter how good your credit is, it also goes with credit history, and if you don't have a credit history that's 20-plus years, good luck, you know, finding getting a loan from Wells Fargo and all the major banks. So I want to thank you for bringing this proposal forward, and I'm very familiar with your work, so I commend you the work that you're doing. Thank you.
Representative Koznick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the author, the testifier. I was curious about what the default rates are on the current loans that you have. The significant amount of your ask here today is for new loan funding, so I'm curious about what your existing default rates are. And then the term was loan packing. I have a credit management background and a mortgage finance background, but I'm not familiar if you could clarify what that term refers to in terms of lending.
To the testifier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and member. Our default rate is we have a small loan relative to big sized loans. Our default rate is, as of now, it's a 0.002%. It's almost default rate is they are late, not really default, they're still paying. So very small.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, on line 1.14, there's the reference, and maybe if staff knows or somebody knows it, it says business technical assistance, loan packing, and community development services. So I'm not sure what that refers to.
Our program is a part of our program. Our program is a business development training program. It is a 12-week training program that helps inspiring business or business already in business to help them to understand how to work the to function in U.S. Lending loan packaging is part of the lending, but we do package the loan and then do lending, which is part of our technical assistance program, and we do lending, which is underwriting. It's a packaging, is a part of the lending, but it's underwriting and packaging to get all the documentation, all what needed for the underwriting purpose.
If I'm wondering that myself when I saw it,
yeah.
If I could jump in just for a quick second, is it loan packing or loan packaging?
Mr. Chair, loan packaging.
Packaging.
Correct.
Okay, that was my question, Mr. Chair. Yes. Yeah, I'm familiar with loan packaging and the underwriting process and shipping the loans off to to the servicing and wholesaling. So maybe that's a typo in our thing here.
Yeah, we'll have the to authors, take care of that.
If that's what it is, that great. That solves that question. So if I could ask, what is the current portfolio of loans that the organization runs? I know they're asking for $1.5 million. I'm curious what the – sounds like there's a number of loans, but I'm not sure what the actual current lending outstanding is.
Mr. Chair and member of the committee, we lend in 2018 233,000 loans in 2018, which is we have a straightforward loan. We have we get there from one of our partners at their cost and to lend. The other loan is from City of St. Paul, which is the Star loan grant. And that's work only for the rehabbing the building and interior and exterior rehab. The other is we had $90,000 from deed. We got that early on, I think 2 years ago, we had $20,000, we finished it. And then we requested for more, $60,000 they gave us. We lend it, and then this year, they give us $90,000. So those are our loan. We got the loan from CRF at their cost, and that it was $500,000. And we deployed the first $100,000, and we just got the $150,000 from them to relend it. So that loan is at their cost, which is around 4%. Interest rate and other fees.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure that the answer was very clear to me whether those are loans that the Development Solutions has, or but I was talking about your loan portfolio of existing loans to clients. But maybe we can get that offhand, or we can dig into it now. I don't know how we're doing on time, but I think it would help the committee as we move forward to kind of know what the ability to lend is, so that $1.5 million is still a lot of money, that we can know what the history is with the organization for their ability to
lend. Mr. Chair, I think we can get Mr. Gugli to give you a package of information. So whatever those requests is, we can get a package together and get it out to all the members.
Mr. Chair, I think that would be helpful for the committee and yourself as we consider this bill in your larger bill. Thank you.
Thank you. I have one question, and then we're going to lay this bill over. But do you partner with larger banks? And if so, which are you at liberty to tell us which banks you partner with in order to create a larger loan package for a business?
Mr. Chair, a member of the committee, we don't partner with a larger bank with our loan because our loan is too small size. So when our businesses need buying building, we directly work with them so they can lend. Currently, we have working with Sunrise Bank and other lenders. Also, nonprofit lenders also we work with. So when bigger size, like buy a building, $800,000, we don't have that capacity, so we directly work with other lenders.
Thank you. Thank you. Seeing no other questions, would you care to renew your motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members. So I open up the conversation that stating that immigrants and refugees often is not, if not always, have difficulty seeking and receiving traditional loans to start a new business. The testifiers that we've seen here today are all a product of the good work that happens when people invest in them, when a non-traditional bank do not do it. So my hope is that I can get the support of this committee for AEDS to continue to do the good work that they have done. We will get documents to you. But we know that when people start a new business, they are hiring people from their community, they are working, they are passing down generational wealth. not only to their families but in their community, but it takes the burden off our state that we are not investing in them because they are investing in themselves. And so, again, I just hope that we can support House File 463. So I do recommend that House File 463 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other business before the committee? Thank you for your testifier, to all your testifiers. Thank you, and this committee stands adjourned.